I have. As long as I live.
Good.
We probably could have done our own shopping, I don't know. But maybe Keith don't mind.
No, it's nice to find, nice to do your own though, find out.
Oh, I kind of like to get in the stores and see, don't you?
Yeah. On Saturday, it's a riot.
That's what I said, though, on Saturday, they keep them open longer, don't they? Like, you think you sound the call. You sound different.
Uh-huh. Well, why don't we just, when did you all meet? And do you remember when you all met?
When we all met in Hines.
How did you meet?
Well, now, what I want to ask Nina, did I know you, were you there when we were first in Hines?
No, I wasn't.
You
I
wasn't
was there,
there
the second time.
And only the second time.
Mm-hmm. The second time.
And Nina was a neighbor across the way in Hines.
And I done her washing and ironing so that I could send Alice to high school.
Who is Alice?
That's my daughter.
Oh,
you see, we had to take transportation, and times were awfully hard. And I done that so that I could earn the money for the transportation so she could go to school.
Well, you didn't have a daughter when you first knew Madge.
Yeah.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
She's 52 years old, my daughter.
Oh, you had an early, young.
She went to school to me.
To you?
Yeah.
Oh, you were
Oscar and I were teaching in Hines at that time. We had been there 2 years before for about 3 years. And then we went away to Pisa, and then we were called back. I had a chance to go back, and we went. Because Hines is more like home than any place. And there was Nina across the way, Nina and Dennis, and Alice, and so on, Douglas. Now, about the teaching days, so you go ahead, you're here, you go ahead and tell
what
more you remember.
Just talk
well,
together.
Alice had graduated from
the eighth grade out in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came in, and Alice had never had anyone in her class out in the country. So when she came to Hines, it was rather hard.
Oh, my God. That's a nice one.
It was rather hard for her to have other children in her class because she'd always held the fort all to herself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she always said she'd never got through high school if it hadn't been for Oscar and Madge.
Huh.
Because they straightened her out and got her started right, on the right track. So she was always awful grateful to them. And I was awful grateful because, like I say, I could earn her transportation.
Uh-huh.
And Madge helped me in many, many ways. She could earn the money and I could do the work. Well, wasn't that true? You know, she could teach school and I couldn't. And then she'd hire me to do things that she'd like to have done. And then her mother lived with her.
Oh, your mother was with you?
Yeah. She was with me 1 year, I think, one whole winter.
And her mother and I was awful good friends.
Do you remember about her mother?
She was just the most wonderful little
lady. You tell about
lady.
Her.
And she was always quilting.
Oh.
And she couldn't see to thread her own needle. So Oscar would thread about 20. And then when I'd go over long in the afternoon, she'd be all done with those 20 needles. So I'd thread 20 more.
Oh.
And then she'd always cook coffee for me.
Did she look like Madge?
Well, some, but not too much. I think Madge must look like her dad.
Madge doesn't look like me. Madge looks like my mother's family.
Yeah.
I'm blonde, but the rest of them are all dark. My dad was very dark. He was one of the black Norwegians.
Oh, like the black Irish.
Yes, and hair. He died at 63, and his hair wasn't gray.
There is some real black Irish, aren't there?
Yes, uh-huh.
You know, my dad was Irish. He had brown hair. And his mother's name was Costello before she married my dad's dad, you see, my grandfather. His name was Costello. So when she got married, she never changed her name.
Hmm.
Wasn't that funny?
Yes, they're from the Spanish.
They were from Ireland.
Mm-hmm. My family are Black Irish.
Yeah.
The Spanish lived on the shores.
Well, I don't know whether here is the place to tell about that. It's someplace, you know. When I was in Caledonia and coming home on the train, there had been a lecture had been in Caledonia the night before. And we got to talking. And I said, he said, "You are Iberian." And I said, "Well, I'm pure Norse because both my parents are Norwegian." "Well, that doesn't make any difference." I said, "My parents are, my folks on both sides, most of them are dark, especially my mother, on my father's side, they were just very dark." "Well," he said, "that the story is that these Iberians were brought up by the Norse invaders from Spain, and the women."
Mm-hmm.
"And that's the beginning, and of course you'll find those short Norwegians are dark all along the coast from Bergen up farther north."
"They are."
"Uh-huh, there are a lot of them are dark." "Well, there are the Black Swedes, too."
"Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
the
same thing. That's
a home that they were." "Gunheim says the same thing."
"Mm-hmm.
So there must be something to it. And so I'm not one of those, not altogether, I suppose I have their blood in me. I'm not one of those Vikings. You know, I don't care much about them either. They're nothing but a bunch of bandits from beginning to end. They stable their horses in the cathedrals and everything else. And I'm glad I'm not too much related to them."
"Are they small, the Iberians?"
"No, the Vikings are big.
Iberians.
The Iberians are rather stocky and not tall."
"Mm-hmm.
They're not small exactly, but they're not tall like the Vikings, like the Nordics. And they have big bones, rather large hands."
How long did your mother live?"
"My mother died at 83. I think she was 83. And she died in Christmas, 1940.
"Oh, she lived a long time after."
"She lived a long time. She lived, when she died, she was my sister in Staples. Oh, I can say lots of things about my mother."
"Well, say something."
"And she was quite a person. She was very different from my father in her makeup. Quite sentimental, sometimes emotional, and very pretty. When I went back to Norway, I talked with... When I went back to Norway, I talked with a woman who had been a servant in my mother's home. You know, the servants didn't get much. They got a new dress, an everyday dress, and maybe shoes once a year or something like that. And she asked about my aunt and my mother. And they had left. This was in 53, and they had left Norway in 82, so you can imagine the time span. And she remembered them. And she loved my youngest aunt, Helena, who was some years younger. And this is what she said about my mother. "Hon var en pen jente." She was a beautiful girl.
Was she educated? Had she gone to school?
Well, I think all the education that any of them had was in the church school somehow. They learned to read and write, and their writing was, all of them, their writing was beautiful, real script. I think I have a little of my father's writing, but I don't know, it wasn't saved. Of course, we just didn't think about it.
Were and, they religious? Were they religious?
Now, as far as religion is concerned, they were Lutherans, nominally Lutherans. And they went to church, and they were went to church once in a while, but they didn't make any point of going to church, especially after, as I remember. And none of us three were confirmed.
Oh, so they weren't very.
Well, I tell you how that happened, that I wasn't confirmed. I went to the neighbors in the church south of us, about 6 miles away, and I stayed there to go for what was confirmation. They had an old fellow who was to teach him, you know, in the schoolhouse, in the country schoolhouse, and all the Lutheran kids around there went to school. And I guess it was about 2 weeks before I came home. I was having a good time. I kind of liked it. We had to memorize the Bible history, and I have them yet. I have and a little catechism we had to memorize. And I like to read it once in a while. You know, about creation and everything. Mm-hmm. The language is kind of magnificent, mm-hmm. kind of lovely and all that. But this old fellow kept urging us and telling us how we would have to be good and how we would burn forever if we weren't, mm-hmm. and how we had to do this and that and the other. And he made it very plain. I remember one time he said, the flames of hell are that high, and he showed.
Oh, didn't that scare you?
And,
Didn't that scare you?
No, it didn't scare me.
Didn't?
I don't know, there was something in me. I'll tell you that, too. And another thing, none of them could go to dances. We kids did dance from the beginning. We grew up among the Irish, and they had no restrictions.
No.
And so you couldn't go to dances when you were going for confirmation,
no.
You see? Mm. But it was all right to do it afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't see why it wasn't all right to do it. Wasn't any worse to do it one time than another. But I guess I didn't say any. Well, anyway, I came home, and I told my folks that. My mother didn't say anything. I guess it didn't mean a thing to her. She never did believe it, I don't think. And neither did but my father. He saw farther. He said, well, I guess you don't need to go anymore. So I didn't go. And I didn't like it very well because I was having fun with the other kids. Families, they were landowners.
Oh, they owned the land.
They owned the land. So they were
better off.
Aristocrats, so-called, but
yeah.
They didn't have any money. My mother's family owned a lot of land, and I have that story written up by my cousin.
Uh-huh.
It's all written in there, and they owned a lot of land. They owned the forest way off.
Oh, they were.
And so on. And so they thought they were kind of important.
Well, they were.
And
go ahead. I just want to take them.
And my father's family didn't own so much land. In that valley where they were, they had begun to divide it up. So they had a smaller patch. And comparatively, they were not so rich as my mother's. But
why?
They own their land, too. They own their holdings. And the way they lived in both families and did continue to live was that they would, they had a law in the beginning. They continued to, they had, the government made them conserve the forest. And they, in each community, there would be about several families that would own the mountainside together and send their sheep there in the, and their cattle for the summer. The cows would come down to be milked. They knew.
Mm-hmm.
So the cows come back? No, sometimes they did, but that was in the small pasture. But they would be up on the satyr, and they'd have to go up there and milk them, and the cows would come there.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them had to go up to their satyr, stay all night, and bring the milk down.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that the last time I was there at my father's place.
Hmm.
But I didn't get it to go. I didn't undertake the walk.
Uh-huh.
But they would cook Remagrut, and they said they had grand times.
Why did they leave their land? Now, if they were so well off, usually the immigrants were the poor,
well,
you know.
The land, the farms went to the oldest son.
Oh.
And the rest. Now, my father, when my grandmother died, my grandfather had died. But some way or other, my father was heir to some money. In other words, the others would get some money. The son would buy them out,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't take it. He let it go back to the family. This is the difference between. Oh, there's much more to the way they live there. This is the difference between my mother and father. My uncle brought a whole colony of people over here. When he went back in, I can't say. When he went back to Norway a second time, I think, or was it the first? Anyway, they told me afterwards that he took back here 50 people.
Hmm.
In the meantime, he had gotten to be quite a big farmer in North Dakota. He came over as a young man, and he was married, and he was divorced, and was about to marry somebody else, this woman, this Swedish woman who was a Swedish beauty. That was the time that he sent her down to New Orleans to some private school to be educated, and at the same time he shipped in a carload of mules to do his farm work. I always think of that. Good deal.
He was far-sighted, wasn't he?
From New Orleans. Well, anyway.
Usually got married just like you got a mule. I mean, somebody to help you.
Well, that's what we women generally are, aren't we?
All these people worked their way, you know.
Mm.
And my folks came that way. I think I'll stop there with that part because I'm going to write him up separate.
Did they come and work for him?
Yes, they worked for him on his farm. He had farms out in Ransom County, a lot of land there. And he had he had several homesteads. He had various ways of getting these homesteads. He'd hired men and take the homesteads, and he'd buy it.
That was a real. That was the only way to get rich.
Well,
I think they all done that. They done that a far away too.
Yes, it was. How can you tell people not to steal or not to, when you give them a chance? I mean, you give them a golden pot and put your paw in.
Well. I'll stop there with him. Gave women the suffrage very early. Ahead of, long before others had it.
Mm-hmm.
And that must have come out this way. It goes back, I can illustrate that by my grandmother. But, you see, on the home place, on the farm, it was the women that did the work. And the women ran the farm. The men would go out to sea or go away somewhere to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And the women ran those farms, and they say that Norwegian women are very domineering, too.
I see.
And my grandmother was. There's no question about it. She was a small woman. She died around 98. I'd have to correct those dates. I could find out them sometime. And she was left to run the farm when all her children, except her married daughter, her oldest married daughter, they all left. And she had no one left but her daughter-in-law and That was all. And she wouldn't go. She ran that farm, and they got up some more. I have the whole story there, but I'd like to get that all in one unit. I have it written.
You have it written.
I found that out. I have it partly written. I found all this out when I came back, so it will go into another part of my.
Well, you don't tell what you have written.
I found out how they ate and how they lived and how they did.
Oh, that all written down.
Well, I have it written in notes.
Well, that's.
I think I'll put that in. It'll come in the last of the book. It'll come where I come back to the beginning. Now, you asked about my mother here. My mother and my folks, my mother anyway, and I don't know about my aunt, they did not do the outside farm work that other women did around there. They milked. Mm-hmm. My mother did the milking. But she did not take care of the cow.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't take care of the horses. She had nothing to do with the barn. Took care of chickens, but never cleaned the chicken house.
They would.
She didn't do that. And wasn't expected to. Whether that was due to, but other women did around there. There were other women that did, but not the Irish either.
Oh, yeah.
The Irish neighbors didn't do it either.
The Irish are too lazy, though.
No, the men did those chores.
I think that the Irish really respect their women like that. They want their women to be ladies. That's as near as I can understand them. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, you know, mother always said she was a lady.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
The grandfather done the work.
Oh.
But she couldn't seem to get Dad to consider she was such a lady.
Well,
I think so. And I've noticed a lot of that. So a lot of the Irish are that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was going to say about my mother. No, she had her own way, but my father. My father was kind of a silent kind. He was kind, but he was quiet. And when it came right down to it, I think his was the say-so for this reason, that he was the one that sold the crops and got the money and so on. But my mother was not dominated, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
She had ways of getting her own way, and I guess he was willing to let her, too.
Did you ever read?
Well, it's this way. My uncle brought them over. He was already established.
Mm-hmm.
And at Fargo, he had built a lovely house already. He had that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big house with one part of it where the men could sleep, sort of an L. There was a kitchen and a dining room and a porch, sort of an inside porch, but a big dining room for the men. And all the way upstairs was a sleeping place for them. And in the other part, there was what he called an office or another kitchen and dining room. But no, that wasn't the office. That was another. And his office and the living room, and I remember the wallpaper was gold and so on.
Gold?
Plus furniture. And he'd already done quite a bit. And then there was his bedroom. And upstairs there were, I think, three bedrooms for others. And my folks came to that kind of a place, although they didn't live there. But they didn't have to pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
They worked, my father worked for 2 years in Fargo. I don't know what he did. Fishing, a part of the time. Made his living, and then, of course, they didn't live too good, probably. But they lived there. And then when they went out, they went out on my uncle's farm for about 9 years before we came on our own. And they lived in that house. And it was a small place.
What were they farming? Was it cattle or wheat?
Wheat.
Both wheat?
Mm-hmm. But they had some cattle. They were always self-sufficient,
mm-hmm.
cattle and chickens. some of the farmers, if all the farmers there had them out in the Red River Valley, there's only the wheat farming. Mm-hmm. But I think even there, they all had
their own things.
And then we bought our farm, he bought the farm, and that was built. And there was no loneliness, not much in a way, because there were the working men on the farm. And neighbors around, the Irish neighbors who had peace and dances, and my folks were included, although we were a little, we weren't Irish, but we were in the neighborhood. And so we weren't lonely as we grew up and didn't have that. Now, I remember that in the earliest days that I can remember, they were mostly Scandinavians, and there were always a few hired men that stayed through the winter and worked for their board. And neighbors would come in, even the Irish, and sit around the table and play cards. Had nothing but matches to play with, poker. And my mother would give them coffee. It was probably our buckles and wasn't very strong, particularly, but we had coffee and rusk and something like that she made. Once in a great while, she'd make chocolate. She'd grate the chocolate and do some milk, too. And we'd have, that'd be special. So
there wasn't any racial conflict in the community?
Well, no. No, there wasn't. The Irish, and we always got along beautifully with the Irish. There wasn't any racial feeling. There was in my parents' mind at first, but it was completely obliterated. Now they call, my name is Magda, and they call me Minnie, because they didn't want me to be called Maggie. I resented that to this day.
Uh-huh.
You know. But as they got acquainted with the Irish, that is all gone. And now, as I remember, even the earlier years, not the first years perhaps, but as the years went by, my father thought more of his Irish neighbors than he did of the Norwegian people farther away.
Mm.
Now, you take Claude Devitt, the son of the original Devitt. My father thought of him as his own son.
Mm.
They had the same hay land that they rented together, and they'd take their lunch and go out there. And he said Claude's wife just didn't give him any kind of decent food. He didn't like it very well. And my mother used to put up extra food with it. So
there were no Indians. Were there any Indians around there?
No, no Indians living there. I can remember seeing them. I can remember seeing some Indians coming down the Cheyenne River.
Oh.
We were a little bit afraid, but the folks weren't. I was. And we have an Indian mound that I suppose has been dug up many times, where there are a lot of Indian arrowheads and such things as that.
How many children did your mother have?
There was one boy. When I was seven, there was one boy born, but he was dead at birth, I think.
Mm.
And there again, my mother was taken care of by Mrs. Foster. Oh, what's her first name? I know it, but I don't think of it just now. Mrs. Foster, who did that, who was sort of a
midwife
to them all. And I remember how good she was, and I know what a wonderful person she was all the years. They left for Spokane when I was 14, and her daughter and I were always together. She's living yet. Sybil is living yet.
She is.
We kind of lost track of each other and I just haven't gotten in touch with her. But I understand she's a little bit senile. I met her sister in Spokane. I don't know why. I don't know what holds me back. I should write to her, and then I should talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
I may do it now. You know, all these busy years, you just don't do things.
No, can't do everything. This, yeah. Then she had how many daughters? There are three of them.
I one sister, Olga, 9 years younger, and another one, Carrie, is a little. And I think between them,
that Carrie is a dollar.
Oh, really?
I just love her.
I think between them, I don't know how many grandchildren they have. They have the Hines. And then when we left Hines, there was a period of depression and consolidation. They did away with the last 2 years of school and united with Black Duck. And now there isn't even a schoolhouse there.
Mm-hmm.
Our church is gone, too. Mm-hmm. Our Methodist church is gone,
and
too.
The church is gone.
And the depot is gone.
Oh,
so
yeah.
All we have is a little store and a post office and a garage.
Where?
At Hines.
At Hines? Oh, is that?
Everything seems to...
But there are quite
go to Black Duck in Hines.
But there are quite a few of the young people that are settled there. They're retired, and they go back there to retire.
Well, it's their home, you know. They were raised there, and they like to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they keep their land, I suppose.
We have no work for them there, you know. They cut pulp, but now they have a hard time to get rid of that, so there's nothing for them to do. They'd starve to death if they had to earn their
living.
Well,
so it's just a few old... Social security is left, you might say.
All over the country, you come through Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
It's just like coming through a bombed area, you know, village after village, just wrecked, you know, just like a wreck. It gives you such a sense of violence, you know, it's just time, you know, but everybody's gone. Well, that's what makes the cities so violent now. Now look at all those Negroes that come up from those small southern towns, you see. They don't know a thing about city life, you know, and it's the fact that in Chicago, it was when I was there.
Well, I tied my handkerchief on it so I could dig it up in the spring, because I put it in raspberry season, you know, but in the spring I was going to dig it up. And then he'd come along and he'd mow me a path to the raspberry patch so I wouldn't get wet when I went berrying. And here he seen that burdock with a handkerchief tied on it. So, of course, he mowed it down. And I was looking and looking for that burdock, and I never could find it. And then I was telling my dad about it. And then Dennis said what he'd done, and he said, you know, they're a terrible thing. And when I seen it, it had flowers about that big around, and they were purple, and they had such perfume, you never saw.
That really? I didn't know they had a perfume.
Say, I don't know whether I've seen it or not. I must have.
Oh, a beautiful leaf, big, mossy.
Oh, a big leaf.
Yeah.
And then
you see, then that flower, they turn all into balls. It has that one flower, it looks like a hollyhock blossom. But then there's a lot of little things.
Say, I want some roots. I'll plant it on my place.
Oh.
And I came home in the summer. Well, I can't tell too much about it, but Walter Thomas Mills is the speaker that is to come. Anyway, Frank, my neighbor, Mr. Strong, and another Irish neighbor, Andy Devitt, they came over one evening, or one late afternoon, and wanted me to go and hear Walter Thomas Mills. And way over in the sand hills, I guess we only drove about 10, 12 miles. When we got there, they wouldn't let him speak in their old lean-to or their old sway-back hall that they had. It was ready to fall down. But he wasn't permitted to speak then. But he was permitted to speak in a machine shed. And they had put planks, it's a dirt floor, it's just to cover the machinery. So there we sat on planks with the weeds growing around.
in the dirt floor listening to Walter Thomas.
Oh, how far you had drove?
That was during the war.
Huh? You drove 12 miles.
About 12 miles. That's how far we drove.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of those old two neighbors, you know. And they came to get me. I was a kid teacher then.
Uh-huh. Do you remember what...
I remember, well, he spoke about the war. And I remember he told about how many became millionaires out of that war and what the war was all about, nothing but to bail England out. I remember that much.
Oh.
And that was something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the aftermath of that was when my mother went to live in Fargo with my sister, and they had an apartment there. My sister was working there at the time. And there, well, that must have been the following summer. And there they had Walter Thomas Mills on trial for sedition, speaking against the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were trying him, and I went to hear that. But it droned out, and I think Walter Thomas Mills went to sleep. As far as I could see, he was sleeping. I don't know. But anyway, the upshot of that trial was it dragged out and so on. But he was acquitted.
Oh,
and
he?
I can't think of the judge. I don't remember his name. It might come to me. I should find out some of those things.
He was acquitted in the middle of...
Yeah, he was acquitted. Now, let me see. No, I can't think of the name. But he was a very fine judge.
Must have been.
And he was probably not either liberal or reactionary, just plain honest.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the kind of a man he was. He was there, he was a judge for many years in Fargo. So that was my experience with Walter Thomas Mills.
He was quite a man.
Hmm?
He was quite a man, Mills.
He was quite a person.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of short. He had a beard. I think a gray beard.
Yeah. I've seen pictures of him.
I've seen pictures of him.
Did you hear anything about
him? Well, the Democrats were probably as far as he knew. But I never heard him.
Wasn't against.
Huh?
He wasn't against them.
No. Oh, no. But this neighbor came, and they were good friends. It wasn't that. But he says, what is he? Some Democrat. Oh, he's a Republican. Well, we got new for them.
New for them.
That's all he said. We got new for them. And you know, as time went on, now the Republicans were all for the protective tariff. And they argued, you know, that the farmers would get more money for theirs if they had protection. My father never bought that. Oh, no, it's just there. They don't. No. He never. I don't know where he got his knowledge. Because he read the papers, but our papers are all Republican and everything else.
He probably just spotted.
Just mm-hmm. from contact.
Well, he was getting rooked all the time by selling his beef or selling his wheat.
Mm-hmm. Who was?
Your father. I mean, he was in the economic. He was suffering the injuries.
That's it. He knew he was exploited.
Mm-hmm. That's all you need. It's better than a book.
That's the important thing, I guess.
Yeah.
And, of course, when all this nonpartisan league organization came about, he was gone. Yeah. I wanted to bring out how we lived off the land.
Yeah.
And that's long ago. That's around from the 90s on, or when we were there, 80s. Then, when I come to Hines, that's a new country. The first settlers are living, and their children are in school. And there again, they could live off the land much better than they could in the Dakota. And I'd like to have Nina tell about the difference between South Dakota
and what she found. They're really the comparative luxury of living in northern Minnesota.
Was it because of the soil?
Well, I don't know. You know?
Yeah. And then I want some of her recipes and how they did. I'll say more about it too sometime. But how they fixed their venison and how Nina made bread and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think maybe she can go ahead and talk. But I like that. Why she left, that should be in there. It was South Dakota. It'd be the same north.
Mm-hmm.
Why she left South Dakota and why she went to...
Went to Minnesota. And, well, I think it's interesting of why it was different, you know, why it was easier.
Well, my folks, you know, they had cattle out there, and they were awfully terribly poor. So...
When did they go there?
I just don't remember the year.
Did they homestead?
In South Dakota?
Uh-huh.
Yes. They went from down by Alexandria. My dad drove through, I believe, with ox.
Oh.
To South Dakota, to a little place that was called Boxco at that time. That was at the edge of the hill, down from the Indian church. He drove through, and my half-sister came with him. But mother and my oldest brother was already here in South Dakota.
They were homesteading? They were holding down the claim?
Yeah, they were holding down. And, we had awful rough times. That was all you could say, just rough times. And then, in a few years from then, then Dad decided that he was going to take the four horses, he had two teams, and go up here to work in the woods at Kenstrat. And he worked all winter, and my brother worked with him. He was only about 15. And then they heard of a homestead out in Birch Township, and then they come out there and homestead it. And then
again.
Sent for mother, and it was heaven. We had wood.
Tell how you didn't have much of anything in South Dakota.
We didn't.
Couldn't raise garden in it.
No water.
And we had no water. The water was so hard. And you put soap in it, you know, and it would just turn like milk, the water would. And we didn't have too much of that either. We didn't have very much of anything.
You had some cattle.
Yeah, we had cattle. But you see, we didn't butcher those because those were supposed to be sold.
Supposed to be. You didn't get anything for them.
No, we
didn't
get very little for them.
Was it all flat land? There was no...
In South Dakota?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, on the lower part, but then there was the hills. And on the prairie, you know, it would always get brown, but up on the hills it was always green. And we used to take our cattle up there. Dad rented land from the Indians. Oh, I think their names were Sansas that he rented it from.
Did you get along well with the Indians?
Yes, very well. We never had no trouble with them.
Did you get to know them at all?
Oh, some of them, you know. Some of the old squaws would come and bring mother stuff. I think afterwards I thought that maybe they got this stuff from the government. It was calico and stuff like that. They'd bring it to mother, and then mother would give them stuff. She'd give them
exchange for
bread and milk and stuff like that.
So it was paradise when you got to...
Oh, my. I couldn't get over the wood.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't get over, you know, the dry wood that was there.
What did you burn in South Dakota?
Well, we burnt an awful lot of cow chips.
Yeah.
You know, we'd pick them up by the tubs full and always had to keep them dry. You'd be surprised at a warm fire.
Don't they burn fast?
Yeah, and they make a good warm fire.
Don't they burn fast?
Yeah,
though? You have
but
to
they
a
make
lot?
A warm fire.
Yeah.
Well, now you tell about what you found in northern Minnesota, the way you told it to me.
Well, I don't know. Like I say, it was heaven to us because we could raise a good garden and we had lots of wood and we had good water and we had all kinds of good berries. We had blueberries. Just in them days, you know, they grew just like grapes. They just hung on the vines. And we had raspberries and...
Did your father still work in the woods for money?
And Dad worked in the woods. Then he'd, now and then he'd get a road job. You know, they was putting in roads, and then my brother and him would work together on that. They'd make quite a little, you know, that way.
Enough for cash.
And then we had our cows, so we had lots of cream and butter. Mother was an awful good manager. Dad always had some sheep. He didn't keep them to sell or anything. He kept them for the wool. And Mother spun the yarn.
Oh, she did?
And then she carded the wool and put in our quilt, so we had nice warm quilts. She knit mittens.
Did she weave?
No, she just spun. She didn't weave.
Well, what would she do with the thread? Sell it or?
No, she did.
Knit.
You know, she knit mittens and stockings. It took all of us. There was a big bunch of us. There were four girls and two boys, you know, so it was a big family.
Four girls and two boys.
And that's what I found when I was there. They were still living that same way.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was a little later, but they were living that way. So they had good food the year round.
In the summer,
they saved their root vegetables for the winter, and they had berries, raspberries and blueberries and all the rest that was mentioned. And then there are different ways of taking care of the venison. Now, I'd like to have Nina tell us how she fixed the venison something more. Go ahead.
Well,
your father would go get a venison deer every fall, or?
Oh, we had them real often.
Oh,
yeah. If it hadn't been for our vets, you know, we had a big family, and we had meat whenever we wanted it. The game warden never bothered us.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd take the ham and make a brine and put them in, you know, out of salt and brown sugar and the front shoulders and the ham. And then we had a smokehouse, and we'd smoke them. And, oh, is that ever good? It tastes just like ham, you know, but it's all lean, and it's tender, just as tender as it can be. And then we'd take, and especially in the fall, we had as many deer as we wanted. They'd grind it, or Mother and I'd grind it, and then we'd mix pork with it. And we didn't have casings. Yeah, we raised our own casings. We didn't have casings, so we'd take sugar sacks, you know how they were thin, kind of like cheesecloth? And we'd make our casings, about so that the sausage would be about that big around. And then we'd pack them into these casings, and then we'd put them in brine just like we did the ham for so long. And then we'd hang them in the smokehouse and smoke them, and then slice them. We always slice them about that thick, and then we'd fry them. Oh, boy, is that good as pancakes. You know,
boy, were they good. She used to bring me some.
Uh-huh.
You know, I lived during that time. And Oscar and I certainly enjoyed those.
We did that up north with the bear, ground-made hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was delicious.
I mentioned.
It was a young, lean bear, you know. It was. Many people just threw the bears away after they killed them. But I thought it was marvelous meat. And we had a roast right off the bear the second day, which I thought would be kind of raw, you know. But it was really good. We just baked it.
No, it seems, for people that had been as poor as we were in South Dakota, it really was heaven.
There wasn't even any wild game to shoot there in South Dakota?
Well, in South Dakota, there was prairie chicken.
Yeah.
And cottontail.
That's it.
Lots of cottontail.
Uh-huh. They're not like a deer.
Oh, no. And we even had moose, you know, up there. Dad now,
moose?
Yeah, Dad now and then would kill a moose. I remember the first one he killed, he hauled it in on the, he had a kind of a flat thing that he used to load the rock on, you know, to haul them off from the field, because our place was awful rocky. And he hauled that in, and he hauled it down by the barn, and he called us kids to come and see it. It looked just like a mule.
I've seen them in the woods. What does it taste like?
Oh, it's good. It's not like venison.
No?
It's more like corned beef, you know, kind of coarse.
Oh.
And it's
the
dark.
Moose.
Yeah, and it's dark meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you do with that?
Well,
same thing?
We had to do the same thing. A lot of them dried it, but we never dried it. We just smoked it in the smokehouse.
I got very fond of that jerky
in
Montana. They still make jerky in Montana. Like the Indians did, you know, hanging it up on the clothesline and letting it dry.
Now they take them venison, anybody that has extra, and they take it to the meat market, and they have it ground and put into casings, you know. Makes regular summer sausage out of it, but they spice it too much.
Oh, take away the taste.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
But this year I had them, when I was down to Madge's, and they hunted at our place, my kids and them. And so they left me 2 front quarters and a ham. And I took the ham up to Black Duck and I had it ground. And in the meantime, you know, I'm Scotch, I had bought a box of bacon ends. And they were all fat. And I didn't know what my dickens should do with them because I can't use fat. We used to use that grease, you know, but I can't use it anymore. So I took that box of bacon ends and had them ground along with this here ham. And boy, did it ever make good sausage.
Oh,
you know?
Did you make your own soap with a fat, like a...
Mm-hmm. You might tell how you make your soap. Tell how you make your bird.
Yeah,
the soap, that'd be nice
soap,
to have.
Soap, uh-huh.
I made it too.
You remember when Nina...
I have made it at home.
Nina, what do you call it, used to make soap to sell at the bazaar? Nina, what's her last name?
Yeah, Nina Anderson.
We used to all save our fat for
might
her.
Might as well put that in.
Yeah. Yeah, people don't know how...
Well, you say you save a 2-pound coffee can full of any kind of grease.
Mm-hmm.
Tallow or any kind of grease.
Tallow, too?
I use any kind of grease.
Mm-hmm.
Not chicken grease, because that is too soft. It don't go hard. You get hard. But I use any other kind. I save a 2-pound coffee can full. Then I have a can of lye, Lewis lye. 5 cups of soft water. I put that in a white granite pail that I have. First, I put my lard in there. And then I put my half a cup of ammonia and a half a cup of sugar.
Sugar? I didn't know that.
And
cold water soap.
5 cups of soft water. You use soft water. And I use a wooden stick and I stir that all up good so it's kind of like cream. Then I put my can of Lewis lye in there. But you want to stay away from it yourself, you know, but you put it in there. And then you stir that up. And that cooks that water and grease together. And then I put it in an old dripping pan I have.
Well, the moisture drips out?
And then it's just like when you put it in there, it's just like heavy cream when you put it into that pan. And then, probably if I do that in the forenoon, towards evening, I go down and mark the bars I cut right through it.
Oh.
And then I let it stand till the next day. And then the next day, I dump it over, and there I have my bars of soap.
Oh, I didn't know the lye cooked. I thought you had to cook it, too.
No, it's better if you do it this way, because so often when you cook it, it separates.
Some people do cook it, then.
Yeah, they used to years ago out in an iron kettle.
Yeah, that's what I associated with.
No, I don't cook mine at all. I just mix it that way. And by putting the lye in the last thing, it's so hot, you know,
mm-hmm.
that it cooks it.
Hmm. That's interesting, isn't it?
And I make soap. I shouldn't. They all tell me I'm crazy. But I have such a good feeling using everything.
Well, I wish you'd send me a bar of it. I just love that soap. Yes. I bought Nina Anderson soap, and I'm all out of it. But I think it's the greatest soap for your skin.
Well, we'll make
just plain, some. Just plain soap.
You'll have some next summer.
Yeah, when you come next summer, I'll see that you have.
Yeah, I'd love to have it. I had this bar for a long time.
I'm just a funny person that way. I seem to kind of like to save everything.
We get a pleasure out of using it.
Getting
uh-huh.
something, making something out of nothing.
Yeah,
I think that's
so.
The way I feel like.
Uh-huh. It's a great pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Now about your bread. That bread.
I don't know.
There's nothing like that.
I don't know if I can tell you because you
nothing
know,
like her bread.
How did you make that that self-starting thing?
Well, that's the,
how
no.
did you?
You started.
You made all your bread that way.
Yeah, but you started with a yeast cake in the first.
Well,
place.
You do that, but nevertheless, it has a flavor all of its own.
Yeah. You take you know, your potato water after you have boiled your potatoes. You probably mash a potato. I used to put mine in 5-pound butter jar, and then I'd put a half a cup of sugar in there and a yeast cake. They were square yeast cakes in them days.
Yeah, I know.
And then you'd let that stand whole probably a week.
A week, yeah.
Not where it was too hot, you know, probably in the cellar. And then when you went to bake bread, you saved your potato water again for your bread. But you saved a cup of that potato water to put back into your yeast. You took one cupful out of that butter jar.
The yeast, yeast.
Yeah,
one.
You make more potato water.
Yeah, and then you put another cupful of the potato water back in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take that other potato water that you have left, and you put that cupful in there, and about a half a cup of sugar, and then you make your batter for your bread. And then I always scald milk and put in my bread. And when it was cold,
you just put the flour in that.
In that, and it'll raise right up just as light and fluffy.
Mm-hmm.
Then I scald milk and cool it and put in there and a little salt, and then mix it stiff. Then it comes up once, you mix it down, and the next time it comes up, you put it into loaves. And then when they come up, you know, so they're twice their size, I suppose, you bake them. We used to bake them an hour, but I don't anymore.
But you bake them less?
Yeah. I think with a bottle gas, the heat is different than with a wood stove.
Mm-hmm.
Is that different, too?
Uh-huh. I think
so. It's not as steady.
No, it's not as even a heat as the bottle
gas.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And that was that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like to taste it.
Yeah.
Well,
what kind of, you just use white flour?
Yeah, but, well, you can use dark flour just as well. Mother used to make an awful lot of dark bread. Awful lot. She used to make cornmeal bread. All of those kinds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for eight people, you have to have a lot of bread.
Yeah. She made a lot of dark bread. And like I said, we had lots of meat and lots of potatoes. And I think of it now, I try to raise Rudy babies. And mine gets so bitter and nasty. And my dad used to haul them in by the wagon loads and put them in the barn. He had a big bin there. And then he'd chop them up and feed them to the cows.
Oh.
And mother used to mash them. That's what I was thinking of. She'd mash them just like you do potatoes.
Oh, they're so delicious.
That's the way I like them.
Mm-hmm. They are so good.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little bit
Why
of
did yours get strong? And
I don't know. I think my ground must be too old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the garden's too much. I should have a new spot.
Well, you know,
or else
it's really big. You cannot use old ground. You can't do it. They have to be raised on breaking or new ground.
Oh, you can't put stuff back in?
They have to be treated.
Now, Pine County was called the rutabaga county for a long time. You know, you probably just have to aerate it and put more back in, nitrogen or something.
No, they took in, like with Dad used to burn a brush pile when they were clearing, and then just throw baggy seeds in there. And
throw in the ashes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they must need a lot of nitrogen.
The seed seed has to be treated. Oscar couldn't raise them anymore unless he treated the seed. Then we had rutabagas.
I never knew that. That's probably
wrong.
There has
to be something done.
You know, you have to treat nearly every kind of seed now.
Parasites or whatever you call it. The rutabagas are very much subject to...
I knew an artist once in St. Paul. He wanted to study art. He was from Pine County, you know. So he didn't have much money. So he took... a barrel of rutabagas and shipped them to New York. He shipped a whole barrel of rutabagas and that's all he ate.
He also shipped a sack of oatmeal, didn't he?
Oatmeal and rutabagas.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Well, there is no better food than oatmeal. I don't know about the rutabagas.
Well, they are good food too. They have all the vitamin C.
And rutabagas have minerals in them.
Minerals and vitamin C and...
Well,
uh-huh. Your mother must have been a very energetic person.
She was. She worked awfully hard. And it was funny, after dinner, mother always went and lay down.
Oh.
And nobody never bothered her till she'd had her nap. And then Dad would come in generally, when he knew mother would be up, you know, and put the coffee pot on, because then when she'd get up, she'd have a cup of coffee. Then she'd be as good as new.
Oh, she was wise.
Yeah. But she always had that nap.
Did somebody do the dishes while she was napping?
Oh, kids, of course.
Oh. You all had to work.
Oh, yeah. But Dad never wanted us girls to work outdoors. And it hurt his feelings also when we got married. We all worked outdoors, every last one of us. We were so greedy to get ahead, you know. And you know, really, if you are going to get ahead, the woman does have to do that.
Yeah.
She can't just work in the house. Mm-hmm. But Mother kept us busy in the house.
Did all your sisters, did they all farm and stay on the land?
Well, yes. They all loved the land. They were just as bad as I am.
Did your father love the land?
I think he did. And I know Mother did. They loved the land.
That's something a lot of people don't understand, is how you can love the land, even when it doesn't make you rich or give you largesse, or, you know, that you can still love it.
What I like, why I think I love the land so, it's such a security, such a safety for you. That's the way I feel.
Mm-hmm. It's there.
Yeah. And it's the same way about the cattle. You know, when we had to sell ours, I felt so terrible bad. And they, none of them could understand that. None of the women could understand it. And I said, you know, those cows fed me when nothing else did.
Mm.
And they did.
When did you have to sell them?
When Dennis had his heart attack.
Oh, he had his heart attack. Yeah, how many did you have then?
8. And we had them bred up, you know, so that they...
You knew their fathers and their mothers?
No, we had that artificial breeding.
Oh, you did?
So we had awful good Holstein cows.
Did you sell milk? And
no, we sold cream.
Oh,
we shifted. We done real good with our cows.
With 8 cows?
And a lot of people, they don't handle cows because they say they're just a rope around their neck.
Yeah.
But our cows never was a rope around their neck. In the spring, we veiled the calves and saved the money for to pay our taxes, and then we hired our hay, cut and baled, you know. And then we had our cream check all summer long to save or do whatever we wanted to, you know, with it.
All your cows came in.
Yeah.
You breed them in the fall. And the...
No, they freshened in the spring, and then about 6 weeks from then, they'd come in heat again, you know, so they'd be... In the spring again, they'd freshen. Generally, always in. We generally had our first veal so that we shipped them for Easter. Because you'd always get.
How long does a cow take to have a calf?
9 months.
9 months, is it? Same as people?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't realize.
And 6 months, or 6 weeks for a veal calf. They suck their mother for 6 weeks. But them cows, they'd only get half of the milk because that's all they needed. Then they'd milk the other half.
Would you sell them in 6 weeks?
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, real. They don't ever get to do that anymore, I guess.
Well, I don't know.
They're taken off of the...
We would, because we'd have kept on. We'd have kept on dealing our calves. Because that was always brought in off of good money. You know, we get from $85 to $90 for a veal.
Really?
That's before Easter, that's your best time to have your calves ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the animal, it's a...
And it looks pretty darn tough at our place. Everything was leaking and the fences is going down and the weeds is growing up and...
Well, you're not farming it now.
No, kept everything down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a very good-looking place.
Did you have to sell your cows all at once?
Yeah.
After he had the heart attack?
Mm-hmm. First he had the heart attack, then he had a stroke.
Oh.
And I couldn't do both. I couldn't take care of him and take care of the cattle. And we couldn't afford to keep him in the hospital.
No.
But you know, that cost terrible.
He must have felt bad, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
And I think it hurt him worse to see the way the fields went.
They have to sit there and see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the way it is going everywhere in Dakota, too. I mean, it's a general thing. Now, there in Hines, you take that is a story in itself. The Hines home, big, I don't know how many rooms, great big house and farm and so on. They were the first settlers. And now the son, the house stands empty. And the son has gone away to work, he and his wife. Their children are grown, I guess.
Yeah.
And and but they expect to come back. So many of them come back to retire now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they cannot make a living on those farms.
No.
So they have to go away and they houses stand empty.
Well, they're lucky if they can pay the taxes and keep them.
Yes.
And,
well, I guess they do that to a certain extent.
In Iowa, where I was in Shenandoah, and these beautiful old English, you know, New England houses standing